There's a fanfare that tells us it's Thursday here on Main Street. Our good friend Matt Olien is with us in the Main Street studio. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks, Greg.
We are going to review a movie, The Phoenician Scheme. Here's the trailer.
At this moment, rescue workers are laboring to recover and identify the remains of Zsa Zsa Korda. International businessman, maverick in the fields of armaments and aviation, among the richest men in Europe. This was Korda's sixth recorded airplane crash. He is survived by 10 children, 9 boys, 1 nun, his daughter Liesl.
I've appointed you sole heir to my estate, which you may come into sooner rather than later.
Why? It's been 6 years since our last meeting.
I have my reasons.
Which are what?
My reasons? I'm not saying. I'm saying I'm not saying. Korda Land and Sea Phoenician Infrastructure Scheme. My most important project of my lifetime.
Our objective, disrupting, obstructing, impeding, crippling Korda's enterprise in any manner possible.
Get the hand grenades. Today, tonight, and tomorrow, we rendezvous with every Titan and pretend we agree what we already agree. But in fact, we don't. We can't.
Call it.
Heads.
Heads.
Is this supposed to be here? It was under the lunch trolley.
Oh dear, we shot you.
Terrors from out of town. Help yourself to a hand grenade.
You're very kind.
Could you imagine falling in love with a man like me, by the way, hypothetically?
You're drunk on 3 beers.
Why are you shooting my ceiling?
This is a robbery on behalf of...
I understand that. I'm asking about my ceiling. You idiots are destroying a magnificent nightclub.
One thing you'll never know, because you can't. The truth. I suppose I'm moved by this absurd performance. I recognize this assassin.
Come now.
Suicide pedal.
As for father, take this miserable sin into the company.
All right, Matt, this might be a comedy, maybe a dark comedy, absurd humor, maybe deadpan dialogue, satire, slapstick.
All of that, Craig. And of course, within 5 minutes or 5 seconds, 5 seconds of watching the trailer, you know it's a Wes Anderson
True.
Movie. There's no question. He is a auteur for sure. And then, of course, the definition of that is a director who kind of puts their stamp on every film. Hitchcock was an auteur for sure. Scorsese, you know, Woody Allen. People like this. There's a style, there's a sense of you're watching their movie. They have a personal style. Orson Welles did, John Ford back in the day. And Wes Anderson certainly has that style. Vibrant colors, shot in not in widescreen, it's usually a 4x3 format. The colors are amazing all the time. Deadpan delivery, quirky characters. And, you know, he's known for the Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Grand Budapest Hotel. In recent years, I've grown cool on his movies, and I think the reason is, and I'll get to this in a few minutes, is they're all the same. I've seen this movie before. It's exactly the same movie that he's made 11 times before, but with different characters and kind of a different thing. So this one is better than some of his more recent entries. I did not care for The French Dispatch. I did not care for The Overrated Isle of Dogs. The Darjeeling Limited way back 20 years ago is probably his worst film. This is at least better than those. It takes place in 1950 in Europe. It's about this tycoon, business tycoon, who was a war profiteer named Zsa Zsa Korda, played wonderfully by Benicio del Toro. This is the meatiest role he's had probably since Sicario. And he's got 10 children, and he enlists his daughter, Liesl, played by Mia Threpleton. Yes, she is the daughter of Kate Winslet, and she's very good in the part, even though she probably had an advantage entering the movie industry because of who her mother is. But she is good. He enlists her to kind of be the caretaker of his estate. He's trying to pull off something called the Phoenician Scheme. It's a massive undertaking, business undertaking. He's got a lot of investors. He tries to convince the investors to do it. There's a lot of madcap humor aboard airplanes. His rivals are trying to assassinate him. He somehow always survives. He has a helper named Bjorn, played by Michael Cera, who's wonderful in the part. And along the way, we meet all kinds of crazy characters, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hanks, Bryan Cranston, Jeffrey Wright, Mathieu Amalric, a lot of crazy characters.
God.
Bill Murray is God. We meet a lot of people along the way. And there are some, I think it works best in fits and starts. There's a two-on-two basketball game in a tunnel between Del Toro, Riz Ahmed, who plays this Arabian prince who's investing in the venture, and they play two-on-two basketball against Tom Hanks and Bryan Cranston, and that's a hilarious sequence. Those are the kind of sequences Anderson is very good at. I think it's generally a good film. There's a good father-daughter relationship going on, I think, that Anderson develops quite well with Del Toro and Threpleton. But in the end, I've seen this movie 11 times before, and I just start to wonder, is this the only pitch Wes Anderson has? He described it in an interview recently as handwriting style. We've all got that handwriting style, Craig. I can tell a signature. And I think that's his. However, I think his handwriting style is so similar and so the same every time that I just wonder, does he have another speed in his fastball? And I don't think he does. For example, you know, Spielberg has a style, but then he made Schindler's List. He's not going to make Schindler's List look like E.T. But if Wes Anderson made Schindler's List, it would look like a Wes Anderson movie, and it wouldn't work. You see what I'm saying? I want a little different speed on the pitch at some point with Wes Anderson. Otherwise, I don't think he's ever going to achieve the greatness of Royal Tenenbaums, Grand Budapest, Rushmore, Moonrise Kingdom was wonderful. So I think recently his films have come off to me, and my friend Greg Carlson will disagree with me, who also reviews films in town for the High Plains Reader. He loves Wes Anderson, I do like Wes Anderson. I'm not saying I don't. He's got an original style. He writes his own screenplays with Roman Coppola, who's of the famous Coppola family. So I give him credit for all that, but it's the same movie, and now it feels like almost a cliched Wes Anderson movie. It's like a cliche of a cliche, if you know what I'm driving at. So his fans will like it. I'm just wondering, is this what we're going to get for the rest of his career?
So I'm wondering, Matt, generally I can tell whether, if I were to ask you the direct question, would you recommend this movie to our listeners? And this one, I just can't figure out what you would say to that question. So I'll ask you. Oh,
man, his style is so idiosyncratic. So the friend I went with, she was like, I'm not sure what to think of this movie. You know, and she hasn't seen a lot of Wes Anderson movies. I think she's seen Grand Budapest and Tenenbaums, I think, is his best film with Gene Hackman and the Wilson brothers. His style is so idiosyncratic, I can't really recommend it to someone who has not seen a Wes Anderson movie. You're going to be lost. You're going to be like, what am I watching here? If you're a Wes Anderson completist, as we call it in the business, you want to see all of his films, and I've seen all of his films, all 12 of them. You need to go see it. I don't think this is a masterpiece, but I also don't think it's a bad film like French Dispatch was, Darjeeling Limited. Those are borderline bad films, I think, that he's made. The jury's still out whether this is what we're going to get the rest of his career or what we're going to get something else. I just want to see something a little different.
All right, Matt, let's turn the page. Last week, we talked about top male movie stars of all time and thought it'd be fun to talk about top female movie stars. Matt, and as I thought about this, it seems to me that maybe some older actresses would be on this list,
yes.
which is not maybe necessarily the same as the men in the list that we talked about last week. So who are your favorite?
So that's an interesting jumping off point to get me into this. In general, in movie history, Craig, male movie stars have moved the needle in terms of box office, butts in chairs, more than female stars. That's just the way it's been. Now, in the old days, they were called women's pictures. Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, Katharine Hepburn, Greta Garbo. They were called women's pictures for a reason, because women went to them. In my lifetime, who moves the needle? Clint Eastwood, Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, John Wayne. People go to see their movies. Does anyone go to see a Cate Blanchett movie? She's a great actress. I'm not sure they go to see a Cate Blanchett movie more than she's a great actress.
So Meryl Streep, maybe?
Meryl Streep, yes. So I'm going to get to her in a minute. But yes, let's start with the older stars. I do think Betty Davis, Greta Garbo, even when Garbo retired, people hounded her for 50 years to get photos of her, the reclusive Garbo. She was almost more infamous than famous at that point in her career. But for a 10-year span, her movies made money in the 30s. Katharine Hepburn, was a huge star for years and years and years. And I do think Katharine Hepburn did move the needle, especially when she got older. Her devoted female fans went Maggie Smith and Judi Dench. I mean, they became like a product, their movies, these kind of masterpiece period films. And women would go see their films in general. Men would, too, at the Fargo Theater. You know, Maggie Smith was on Downton Abbey. So I think Maggie Smith and Judi Dench moved the needle as they became older actresses. Maggie passed away last year. Judi Dench still alive. But I think Hepburn Davis, I think Audrey Hepburn is certainly in the list of great female stars. Elizabeth Taylor certainly was someone who could move the needle, even though she made a lot of pretty bad movies. In modern times, I think the two actresses who put people in chairs are Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock. They became, I think, the Davis Hepburns of their era. People would go to see a Julia Roberts comedy or a drama like Erin Brockovich. Bullock, you know, went back and forth between drama like Gravity, The Blind Side, and hilarious stuff like The Proposal. So I think Bullock and Roberts have to be in the conversation. Jane Fonda, I think, is in the conversation for a long time where her films really move the needle. Julie Andrews, Sophia Loren. I do think Meryl Streep threads that needle between great actress and great star. I do think people go to see a Meryl Streep movie because they want to see if she's pulling off a new accent, some great performance. So I do think Streep is in the conversation.
Glenn Close?
I don't think Glenn Close is. She's a great actress. I don't know that she's a great star like Streep is, not quite. She's had huge box office hits like Fatal Attraction. You know, Marilyn Monroe's an interesting one. Her career was so short, and she was dead by 36. Yet today, if you go in a store and see a photo or a poster of Marilyn Monroe, just like James Dean, who we did not mention last week, is his career was so short, we instantly know icon, right? Marilyn Monroe, James Dean. But her career was so short and she was so troubled and had so many personal problems that I'm not sure I'd put her in like a top 10. But those are a few I did come up with that I think are in kind of the wheelhouse of greatest female stars of all time.
I want to go back to last week for just a minute. I thought about this after the show. Did Elvis put rears in seats?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's a really good, I did not think of Elvis because, you know, Clam Bake, Blue Hawaii, Spin Out.
Wife has seen them all several times.
So did my sister. These are horrible movies. But you know what? You just sit and watch, and you know he plays a song, usually a bad song, drives a car, flies a plane around, gets the girl. People went to Elvis movies. He wanted to be something different. If you've seen the more recent Elvis movie with Austin Butler, he dreamed of being James Dean, Marlon Brando, Tony Curtis, Paul Newman. He wanted to be taken seriously as an actor, but Colonel Parker wouldn't let him do it. You know, he had some early roles like, you know, I think King Creole is an interesting movie and Jailhouse Rock. But in general, he was either a pilot or a car driver or something, and it would usually there'd be a clam bake or, you know, pretty girls. I mean, but he did put people in theaters. You're right. That's a good point.
Let's move to our trivia question, Matt. I want to talk about God again, the Phoenician scheme. Bill Murray plays that role of God in the movie. So how many Academy Awards has Bill Murray won?
None.
That's correct. But he was nominated
sure
once.
Was.
Yep. For what?
Lost in Translation, 2003, Best Actor.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olean.